everybody. My name is Dennis Blum. I'm from the Free State and a town called Kroonstad. The minister knows where it's Kroonstad.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Moses Benesi, a member of the committee. Thank you.
Welcome to the minister. You can continue another moment.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Members, National Commissioner and Senior Manager. We thank the Select Committee for the opportunity to present our strategic plan as part of the preparation for the policy debate on our budget in this House next week. I'm aware, Chair, that the committee has had to postpone this engagement until now to allow either the Deputy Minister or myself for us to be available to introduce our presentation before the committee. I would like to extend my sincere apologies that I have not been available during the previous appearance of the department due to prior engagements, including international travel, to attend the United Nations Congress on Crime Prevention and Criminal Justice. In this regard, Chair, let me thank the committee for your flexibility in accommodating us today. I would like to reassure the committee that my department and I remain committed to providing the committee with whatever briefings and presentations that you may require from us in the course of conducting your open ritual. Chairperson and honorable members, allow me before I can address the issues pertaining to the first plan of the department to take this opportunity to formally introduce the new national commissioner of our department, Mr. Tom Moyane. Mr. Tom Moyane has just started in the department recently, in fact on the 15th of Sunday. This is his first official engagement and appearance before a committee of parliament in his new capacity as National Commissioner of Foreign. We also appointed Chair a new Chief Financial Officer of the department, Mr. Stuart O'Kella, also joined us at the same time with a new National Commissioner. And I'm sure that the committee will be pleased that at least with regards to these two key positions, we will not be introducing someone in an acting capacity this morning. We are hoping that we will soon finalize the filling of the remaining senior management position once the logistical and other requirements have been dealt with. Chairperson, honorable members, the department's strategic plan for 2010-11 to 2014-15 is a product of intensive review on the basis of resources in the department over the MPEM. This review work remains ongoing given the need to align our plans to the outcomes-based approach of government and the performance agreement by the president in signing with the ministers in each one of the clusters of funds. Key in this review is the need for alignment of the stress plan to the white paper on correctional services, including an incremental approach to implementation of the white paper as approved by Cabinet in 2005. The core mandate of DCS remains the rehabilitation and reintegration of offenders in a secure and safe environment in order to enhance public safety. In this regard, we are taking serious cognizance of the need to move our emphasis and allocation of resources towards rehabilitation programs and to create a balance between our spend on security and that of rehabilitation. While we still maintain that security is fundamental to rehabilitation, we need to ensure that we increase the number of offenders participating in rehabilitation programs. This will necessitate the reprioritization of our budget going forward during the period of the MPEM. In line with this commitment, additional allocations have been made this year for the funding of the second phase of the OST. We are determined that together with the implementation of the seven-day establishment in the department, we migrate some of the correctional officers who are currently working in the area of support back to the center. We will deploy more resources in the creation of case officers and feeling of hope for case management committee. Despite our understanding that corrections is a people-intensive service, we do intend to reduce the total percentage of compensation of employees from 69% this year down to 63% by 2012-13. Focus for our human resource strategy will be on ensuring appropriate and effective staff utilization. We recognize, Chair, that overcrowding remains a great hindrance to the efficient provision of rehabilitation programs, and this is a matter that has serious concern in our ability to correct offending behavior and ensure successful rehabilitation of offenders that are currently affected. It is important to me that we should understand the different categories of inmates in all our facilities, particularly those who qualify for appearance before the case management committee and the parole board for consideration for reclassification and early release. To this end, Chair, I have appointed an independent task team to conduct an audit of various categories of inmates incarcerated in our centers. We are receiving periodic reports from the task team even as they conduct their work in our region. This information is already assisting us to determine which inmates are supposed to be in our centers and which ones should not be, including those inmates who should be released through the bail protocol and those whose sentences should be converted to correctional supervision. Part of the pressure with regard to overcrowding is as a result of the department taking over the responsibility for awaiting prior detainees, who currently represent over 30% of our total inmate population. As for the decision of Cabinet, as part of the program of the JCPS cluster, the DCF will establish the remand detention branch as part of the structure of the department to create the necessary capacity to deal with this category. Due to the capacity problems relating to the number of officials required to escort awaiting child detainees to court, we are now implementing the remand video court in partnership with the Department of Justice. This is helping to alleviate various logistical and security problems relating to the appearance of detainees in court. Our approach, Chairperson and Honourable Members, is that one of not seeing the solution to overcrowding only in terms of building of new facilities, but a combination of this and with the application of various legal instruments available to us to help us reduce the number of inmates in our existing facilities. We will, however, continue with plans to increase our bed capacity through the procurement for additional facilities through the PTP model with variation to the RSP to ensure that the state maintains its obligation to conduct custodial services, even if these facilities are run jointly with private partners. We've also requested an audit of small centers with very low numbers of offenders, with a view to rationalize and ensure efficient usage of these facilities in order to alleviate capacity burdens on some of the larger facilities. Chairperson, we began 2010-11 with acute awareness that our current budget does not cover the mandate and commitment of the department due to the shortfall that arose as a result of the implementation of the first phase of the OSP. Having said that, and as already clarified during the budget vote debate in the National Assembly, it must be clarified that the department will not budget for a deficit. The department's budget committee is currently meeting regularly to identify opportunities for savings and to reprioritize expenditure to meet current commitments. We are also engaging National Treasury on this matter, and we hope that this discussion will resolve some of the problems with regards to the baseline of the department's budget. As we engage in this discussion, we are currently focused on allocations that cover essential expenditure on inmates, essential expenditure on livestock, capital work, which is ring fence and contractual obligations. honorable member, we will proceed this year with a development of a framework for the utilization of offender labor force. We've always insisted that offender labor should be used to assist with local development projects within communities where the center is located. From a policy point of view, I've also requested that the department operationalize plans to ensure that there is no offender in our facility who does not participate in development programs, and that those who are in categories that qualify to work should be involved in offender labor force. We also intend to develop and resource a comprehensive self-sufficiency strategy. To do this, Chair, we require a thorough analysis of the current production capacity and opportunities, including cleaning our own facilities, laundry, agriculture plants, animals, metalwork, and furniture. The branch development and care will conduct a cost-benefit analysis and determine production levels with a view to identify income-generating opportunities that can be redeployed back to fund rehabilitation programs. Following the Parole Board Summit held last day in September, we are in the process of implementing resolutions to strengthen the system of parole and correctional supervision. The term of the current board will end at the end of June this year, and we are currently in the process of appointing new boards based on a common fixed term of 5 years for all members. We will also be bringing to Parliament a bill to amend the Act, in part to give effect to the proposed changes in the guidelines for medical parole. Chairperson, honorable members, the department welcomes the coming into effect of the Child Justice Act, in terms of which children will no longer unnecessarily be incarcerated in correctional facilities, by that they will be placed in places of safety. However, youth, juveniles, and children who have committed serious crimes continue to represent the majority of offender population in our center. Some of these children are serving long sentences, including life, and therefore will remain in our centers for a very long time before they are released at the end of their sentences or through parole. We have therefore taken a policy decision that all youth who are of school-going age should attend compulsory schooling in all our centers. We cannot have a situation where, at the point when these young people are considered for parole, they leave our centers without acquiring skills or an education to be functional members of society after reintegration. Chairperson, I'm glad that the new National Commissioner has assumed duty and has emphasized to him and the top management that given the current problems with systems as well as financial constraints, I need them to ensure the urgent stabilization of operations whilst addressing current system deficiencies. I am sure that with our determination and the capacity we are starting to put in leadership, we will succeed. Allow me now, Chair, to hand over to the National Commissioner to introduce his team and to lead the presentation on the strategic plan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairperson of the Select Committee, honorable members of the Select Committee, Minister, Deputy Minister, colleagues in the Correctional Services present today. My name is Tom Moyane. I'm the National Commissioner of the Department of Correctional Services. It is a great honor for me to present myself and the team that accompanies me to yourself. I therefore invite my colleagues who are accompanying us here to mention their names and their ranks and the branches to which they are responsible for. Thank you, Chairperson.
Good morning, honourable members. Deputy Minister Jenny Shine, Chief Executive Commissioner only.
put an acronym, please, so that we help this network. What is all?
I apologize. Operations and Management Support is the name of the branch.
My name is Sophia Fakir.
My name is Sifuat Lokela, the Chief Financial Officer of the Correctional Services.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Minister. My name is Landy Mareka, the Deputy Commissioner for Financial and Management Accounting.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Members. My name is Sebastian Woodley. I'm the Chief Deputy Commissioner of Development and Care.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members, Ngela Ncwane, Regional Commissioner for Zulu Natal.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Nancy Kedelo Joel Ngane, the Regional Commissioner of Eastern Cape.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm Zakaria Mudise, the Regional Commissioner for Free State Northern Cape.
Good afternoon, Chair and Minister Deputy Minister. I'm James Smallberger, Regional Commissioner of Western Cape.
Honourable Chairperson and members of the committee, good morning. I'm Manelisi Wadela, Deputy Commissioner of Communications and Correction Services.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and honourable members. I'm Alfred Tetani, the Chief Deputy Commissioner responsible for corporate services.
Good afternoon, Chairperson. I'm the woman say, Chief Deputy Commissioner for Correction. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Nkululeko Batsiama, Deputy Regional Commissioner Limpopo, Mpumalanga and Northwest.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Pico Mbambo. I'm the Deputy Commissioner responsible for executive management in the Commissioner's office.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Angelica Mabunda. I'm responsible for parliamentary liaison within the department.
Chairperson, thank you very much. We have introduced ourselves. I would like, therefore, before we do our presentation, to thank the Minister of Correctional Services, the Deputy Minister of Correctional Services, for bestowing us the honor to come and do this presentation to yourself, together with my colleague, Sipiwe Sokela, who is the Chief Financial Officer. I would like to believe at this stage that the appointment of the two senior managers in the Department of Correctional Services was meant to create stability and leadership. We also want to strengthen the vision for which the Department of Correctional Services has been established, based on integrity, commitment, and excellence. Chairperson, I would like to provide an opportunity for all sitting here that the last time the team came to present, it was in their acting capacities. I'm fully confident and conversant of the fact that we have full complement of capable leadership to take this organization into the new dispensation and be able to provide leadership that is requested and required for a number of years. It is for this reason, therefore, that the issues that were raised before by yourselves will be adequately addressed. I'll take the opportunity to give you a high-level overview of what the strategic plan that we have planned ourselves to be and what it envisages. Since I said technology is... Chairperson, our presentation will cover a number of areas. You have received two presentations, one on the strategic plan in its entirety, and the other one was a presentation on the deliverables on finance. Allow me, therefore, to provide you an analysis as to what needs to be done. We have introduced ourselves. The structure of the strategic plan has been provided to ourselves. We have identified priority areas. With the second section D of the presentation, it will cover the following areas: program purpose, measurable objectives, program performance, project portfolio management strategy, service delivery improvement plan, strategic human resource management, and therefore provide you with a conclusion as it goes on. In our introduction, Chairperson and the members of the Select Committee, the current strategic plan developed against was developed against a backdrop of financial constraints, which the Minister has alluded to yourselves to. During the review, the Department outlined criteria of requirements for each strategy. We have strategies in plan are ones that are funded, met HR requirements in terms of recruitment and development, and other necessary inputs such as technology strategy. We have also looked into strategies that do not fulfill requirements or shifted to outer years when the requirements can be fulfilled. We have also looked into document outline priorities, such as one, MTSF priorities are linked with specific strategies in program performance and cross-references. Departmental priorities are also presented in a program performance and portfolio management strategy. Departmental service delivery improvement plan is forward 3 years. In summary, the summary will also provide us of HR plans that are required in terms of Part 3D of public service regulation is also included in the strategic plan. The structure of the strategic plan is as follows. The structure of the strategic plan is in accordance with public service regulation, Part 3B1, which has Part A, which deals with the forewords by the Ministry and introduction by the National Commissioner. Our apology, because when this was done, it was at a time when the National Commissioner was not in place. Part B will look at the strategic overview, legislative framework, policies, priorities, and strategic goals. Part C of our presentation will look into expenditure trends, multi-year projects of income, information systems. It will also, in Part D, look into program performance, portfolio performance, project portfolio management strategy, service delivery improvement plan, strategic human resource management. Chairperson, I would like, therefore, for us to look and take a pause with respect to the priorities that we'd like to attend to. The plan that we have prepared ourselves for in presenting today reflects 11 priority areas that must be delivered on a medium-term expenditure framework. It also looks into priorities embedded in the strategic plan for purposes of alignment with a medium-term expenditure framework. These are the 7-day establishment implementation, demand detention management, which forms part of the Minister's performance agreement with the President. Offender population management, which is also included in our Minister's performance agreement. Utilization of offender labor, enhancement of parole system, which is also included in our Minister's performance contract. We have service provision for youth and child offenders, improvement of governance, stakeholder relation management, delivery on targets on performance indicators, legislative framework, and finally, offender rehabilitation path implementation. This also forms part of our Minister's performance contract agreement. With these issues in place, Chairperson and members of the Select Committee, we have made it a point that all our strategic plans are aligned with the performance agreement that the Minister has signed with the President, the State President. And therefore, I would request our Chief Financial Officer to provide us with a high-level select to this select committee with a project relating to the financial implications of the strategic plan that we have to present before yourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, members of the committee, Minister, Deputy Minister. Chairperson, I'll allow me to ask the former acting CFO to present the financial situation of the department. But I will add as soon as she completed her presentation.
Thank you, CFO, Honorable Chair, Minister Deputy Minister Commissioner. And Minister has alluded to the constraints that are faced by the department in the 2010 MTF following the department implementing the various OSDs. There was, in particular, in the Department of Correctional Services, all OSDs that reside in other departments are also affecting the department. In terms of the presentation that we forwarded to the Select Committee, we do indicate the allocations for the 2010 MTF allocations. With regards to the baseline that the department has received for the 2010 MTF, we indicate that the amount of 15.1 billion is allocated for the current financial year, increasing in the outer year to 18.2 billion. We are also indicating that as a department, over and above the baseline that was in the 2009-10 MTF, there are additional allocations that we have received too. One, it is an additional allocation of 300 million for the implementation of the OECD Reserve Indicators. And the second one, it is the allocation of 583.652 million with regards to the adjustment, which is the normal salary adjustment of all officials within the department. Members will recall that in the last round of negotiations last year, we had an above normal inflation adjustment for levels 1 to 12 in the public service. So over and above what was in the baseline, we had those additional allocations. It does not necessarily mean that that money is available for other agencies, for the members that are in the system in terms of improvement of their salaries and dispensation. We are also, Chairperson, indicating the allocations in terms of the GFS classification to say that in terms of the current payments, the allocation grows from 12.7 billion up to 15.6 billion in the final outer year, as indicated. And in terms of the payments for capital assets, it grows from 1.1 billion to 2.6 billion. And I must indicate for upfront, Honorable Chair, that the real growth in the budget of the Department of Correctional Services is only around the facilities part, which is the infrastructure part. All other components of the GFS allocation, it is not necessarily real growth, but it is inflation adjustment. We have indicated that basically what we received was the inflation adjustment for the salary, except the 300 million that was for OSD. We indicate, Honorable Chair, from slide 13, in terms of the presentation, the allocation per program. We have 7 programs in the department. The first one, common to all departments in administration. Second one, security responsible for the safe detention of all inmates in the department, corrections, mainly focusing on the corrections program in terms of correction offending behavior of sentenced offenders. The care program, which is basically the health aspect, the nutrition aspect for inmates, development, all the development programs, both formal and informal, and also sports recreational activities allocated there. The sixth one is social reintegration, mainly dealing with the reintegration of inmates back into society, and the last one being facilities for the infrastructure development of the whole department. The allocation are centralized currently. I will then indicate, Honorable Chair, if we move then to slide 15, in terms of what earmarked funds the department received for the 2010 NTS, we have devolutional funds. This comes back about 3 years ago when the centralized funding with regards to municipal services, with regards to leases across government departments, where those funds were devolved back to the line function department. The allocation increases from 1.1 to 1.4. That's one area that has indicated that there can
social works program, another part that we do see very good for all the infrastructural development, both new and also rehabilitation of existing physical structures in the department. With regards to basic analysis at a high level of the vote itself, vote 20, and also the program, we do indicate that if you look at the expenditure of the department in the outer past 3 years, from 6-7, and looking forward to the 3 years of MTF, it looks the department budget grew from 9.3 billion in 6-7 to 13.8 in 9-10. At an average annual growth of 44%. But if you look then at the MTF, we have an average annual growth of 9.7%. We'll then qualify later on in terms of the attribution of the 9.7, so that says that we've got minimum growth. Basically, as I've indicated in the previous slide, what we had as an additional injection in terms of investment is 300 million for the compensation of employees, and also the adjustments in terms of the compensation of employees, the salary adjustments above normal inflation adjustments. If you go then per program, I must indicate, Chairperson, that in program administration in the Department of Correctional Services, you may, when you look at the estimates of national expenditure, pick up that there is a huge allocation that is there. It is because we, over and above the normal administrative functions that ordinarily reside in that particular program, we do have centralized allocations that are centrally allocated and therefore centrally managed and are allocated under program one. One of them being the devolved funding for leases of office accommodation and also municipal services, and the other part being the stores part within the department. Those are centrally allocated, and the part of the devolution of funds, it is the treasury directive that in all government departments, those must be centralized as a program one, having them be developed to departments. That's why then, if you look at our allocation, it may look like that is an abnormal allocation. It is because of the centralized allocation. If you look at program one, which is program administration, the average growth in the MTF 2010, we've got an 8.7%, rising from 3.5 billion to 4.5 billion, as I've indicated. In all programs, will be mainly the overseas, the real cost that is in those programs, except program facility. If you look at program security, the same way, in terms of what the main cause of the growth there, it is us having received the allocation for the implementation of OSDs for correctional officials, but the bulk of the officials within the department are under the security program. And then, of course, a second program in terms of the numbers being social reintegration, but bulk of which are sitting under the security program. And again, as I've indicated, that it is a labor intensive program with 98% of allocation going to compensation employees in this particular program for development. Program corrections, we see an annual growth of 19.8% if you look at the MTF. Also, this program, it is basically the interest always give and not necessarily any investment other than personnel. The next program is CARE. CARE program, we see an average growth there of 2.2%. And basically there, it is attributed to additional remuneration for healthcare workers, because all the healthcare workers are under the CARE program. Psychologists, the doctors, the pharmacists are under this particular program, the nurses are in particular in this program. And all of these professions, they have their own OSDs, not necessarily the other security program, which were concluded in the various other departments. And again, the nutritional services is under this particular program in terms of the nutrition, which is the means for the inmates within the department. Program development, also there, we are seeing an average annual rate in the interest of 10.1%. Again, salaries. The program, social reintegration, which I said is the second labor-intensive program within the department. Also, the increase is mainly around personnel and not necessarily mainly due to the allocation for the additional four new correctional facilities, which is PAR, Eastland and Hillsgrove, and Financial, which is capital driven, and therefore, which is about how we create more bed spaces for the department and also the rehabilitation of the structure. I would like then briefly, Honorable Chair, to take the committee through certain African issues that impact heavily on the 2010-11 allocation. As I've indicated, and the Minister Commissioner indicated, that the basically it is an era where we as a department implemented various OSDs. The main one in correctional services being the OSD for correctional officials that was implemented in 2009-10 financial year, which is implemented two phases, phase one in 2010 and phase two is implemented in 2010, the current financial year 2010, which is the phase two of the OSD for correctional officials. In terms of the allocation, we needed, if you look at the last bullet, the department made a manager speech to National Treasury requesting an average amount of 1.8 billion for 2010-11, 1.9, increasing in the outer 2 billion. Specifically for the implementation of the OSDs, not only the correctional officials OSD, but the various OSDs that were to implement. And against the 1.8 billion specifically for 2010-11 that was requested, we received, as I indicated in the previous slide, an allocation of 300 million. So that's the shortfall that the minister was alluding to. And given that as a department, because we are fully aware of the contents and that are contained in the Public Finance Management Act, that we cannot budget for a deficit. So as a department, there was a serious engagement with National Treasury, and within the department, there was a serious reprioritization of saying that here is the envelope allocated to the Department of Correctional Services, 15.1 billion for 2010, vis-a-vis what as a department we're supposed to be delivering on. And certain critical decisions had to be taken at the stage the allocations were made. Indeed, those you know the confines of the law, we engage National Treasury in terms of saying that we would request that the reprioritization even go further than the normal not enough funding. And there was subsequent engagement with regard to saying that we have to comply to us prioritizing within non-EMS funding. The decision that was taken as a department in terms of prioritizing and reprioritizing the envelope was that first and foremost, we need to ensure that the staff complement warm bodies in the system, we need to fully provide for them and also provide for the phase two of the OSD in terms of the correctional official OSD. Next was the property management EMAC funding, so that EMAC funding we couldn't touch heavily in the National Treasury and also the capital works project for that EMAC funding. Then what was left then, we said our core mandate is about EMAC, both our waiting tribe and sending. And therefore, the first priority outside EMAC funding was inmate contracts. Even then, Honorable Chair, bare minimum, I must emphasize that bare minimum provisions given the size of the envelope. We indicated that inmate cost bare minimum was about 901 million that had to be put aside. And secondly, the department therefore said, inmate first, then the last job, we can't afford to prevent, say, the last job must. Naturally, that could be very careless, and we then push an allocation of 77.2 just to sustain the livestock that is there in the department. This is not about investing in acquiring more livestock. And I must say, we're fully aware of the impact of this decision. Fully aware. This is the very same livestock, if we have investment, that will assist in the department in decreasing the external procurement of operations for India. Those are the very hard decisions that the department had to take. The third one, we did not want to be litigated against because we're violating the contracts that were there at the time of us receiving the allocations, not new contracts, but contractual obligations that were there. The total thereof amount.
amounting to 786 million. And the last one is that we do need to administer the department a total of 107 million of put aside. And I must say, this is some components really to say bare minimum for you to keep the buyer's training in administering the department. And what we then had was a situation where if you take all of that, having put the phase two of OECD that was to be implemented in April, or that there was not enough in delegation with national travel, we then indicate the Honorable Chair how those priorities were allocated across regions, including the head office. I'm not going to go through each detail. The next part that is quite critical is that the minister was indicating there was a policy review around the triple P within the environment of correctional services. Given that process, given us in that process, we engage National Treasury in terms of saying that the facilities are going to be built. It is just a modern issue, and also after a policy finalized. Therefore, there was a shifting of the allocations. As you remember, Honorable Chair, that those allocations were already in our baseline in the previous NTF. So we had, therefore, to agree and say the 2010-11 project plan, there would be some form of amendment, and therefore let's push the allocations to the outer year. This was done in consultation with the department, and everything was signed off between the two departments, which is the CFA and National Treasury. We received and provide allocation later around that one. We are therefore on the next slide, Honorable Chair, summarizing just in tabular format what it is that the department is allocated with, following the priorities that I had indicated were done after serious consideration. We are also indicating, Honorable Chair, due to time, I'm not going to go to each allocation of each region, but we also indicate to the committee what allocations are received by and the various regions following the prioritization process, and both in terms of program and also in terms of the government financial statistics format. Commissioner has indicated a process of the review, which is quite critical, and also following the signing of the government agreement by the minister it's not that we're saying that all other, at the stage of prioritizing items not prioritized, are not a priority. They are a priority, but those priorities need to be aligned to available resources. And that's exactly what the department has done. I will then think about it to the CFO.
Honorable members, the members might notice that the budget of the department has been reduced drastically from 22 million to 140 million. The implication to that is on the service delivery of the department. Because if one looks to the turnover on the department, it's sitting at around about 12 point something percent. That alone, it shows that the department is not yet easy to achieve the goals that the department ought to achieve because of these cuts. The other area that the honorable members that I would like to highlight, the department will engage itself on the zero-based budgeting to start from scratch each and every component, so that we can able to identify the correct baseline in order for us to have the correct base. The reason for that, so that in the near future, we will know that we got the correct baseline. But at the moment, the department is not yet projecting any of the overspending. The department will ensure that the cash management focus of the department and the planning is in line with what is the objective of the department. Thank you, Honorable Member.
Chairperson, we have listened to an overview of strategic financial imperatives of the strategic plan. and therefore request CDC Schreiner to give us an overview with respect to the programs that we would like to implement in the current strategic plan that we are presenting to yourselves. Thank you.
Have distributed to you so that we do not take up too much of your time, but we will go through the different programs focusing on the strategies and some of the targets that we've identified in the strategic plan, bearing in mind that we are going into the strategic review that our previous speakers have spoken to. The format that we have on the slide deals with each of the programs or sub-programs. It gives you the measurable objectives. I'm not going to speak to the second column of it, but I think that it's important for me to explain it up front at the beginning so that as we go through it, the members of the Select Committee are with us on that process. That column deals with the performance measures or performance indicators that we've identified to measure our level of performance per budget program, and we are intending to ensure that we keep those performance indicators over a number of years, over a five-year period, so we're able to provide credible information, we're able to determine whether our performance delivery is improving. And I think that historically that's been one of the areas which Parliament has been critical of us as a department. So that's the project in relation to the framework for managing program performance information has generated those indicators. We are in the process of validating data on them, but that you can expect as something that will be a fairly standard way of reporting back to the Portfolio Committee and to the Select Committee in relation to our performance going forward. So what I'm effectively going to speak to as we go through is the last column, the key targets that we have set for this year. Bearing in mind that we've already indicated commissioners and indicators at the beginning that in doing the strategic plan, we had already tried to take out issues in which we knew we did not have either human resourcing or financial resourcing or technology resourcing that was required to deliver on it. Our challenge now, obviously, is to do the fine detailed planning around it for the operational plan and to ensure that we align ourselves with the performance agreement of the Minister that obviously has not been completely finalised at the stage that we tabled the strategic plan. So within finance and supply chain management, which is a sub-programme under Programme 1, the key targets we've got there are reducing the level of deficiency against the Auditor General's report as a basis. And that is something that we are targeting to go through to be able to get ourselves to a point where we have a clean audit in 11-12. The maintenance of databases, again, I'm not going to speak to this in each budget program because you'll see as we go through that it is a recurring element. But we are ensuring that in relation to that, we are putting in place the necessary databases to, again, be able to ensure that we've got the necessary information to check on whether our progress is taking place. The issues that have been identified there in this program are issues that have been surfacing in our AG reports over the last year, either as issues of certification or as issues of lapses. Corporate services is the second sub-program within administration. This deals with the human resource capacity and the management of human resources within the department. The critical targets that we have in this financial year in relation to that is the approval of an organisational structure that is aligned to strategy, the cascading of that into the post-establishment, ensuring that we can enhance the management of the personal control measures, and finally, and I think that the DC Finance Management Accounting has already spoken at length in relation to the OSBs and the importance of that being aligned with the performance management systems in the department. The third sub-program within administration is central services. This is the grant or the budget program that deals with our legal advice, our policy coordination processes, our communication, our information systems, and our international relations. So that measurable objective in the first column unpacks our commitment to ensure that all of those are effectively managed. The targets that we have identified for this financial year in relation to this budget sub-program deals with the turnaround strategy in relation to litigation, ensuring that we are able to track that on a quarterly basis and that we are able to address the causes of litigation target, which is a very important one for the criminal justice system, and it is in fact not a target that is managed and carried by us, but we are the lead department on it, is to develop a framework that would enable South Africa to measure reoffending racism. The third target that we've identified there is increasing public awareness and appreciation of DCS's mandate through an image turnaround strategy and through ongoing communication in relation to it. It is an important element that we've identified of the extent to which the public does not really understand fully the mandates of the criminal justice system, but in particular our own and our functions quite often get blurred with those of the criminal justice system. The last bullet under that, or the last target under that, is the rollout of an approved ICT governance framework, ensuring that we can improve the way in which we manage the information systems and the technology within our department. The fourth program deals with the issue of operations and management support, the planning, resourcing, monitoring, evaluation, improved for improved service delivery. Our targets there are to ensure that we can reduce the audit queries. Audit queries at the moment, there is no audit opinion that is being expressed in the AG's report at this stage, but we are receiving it in the management letter. It's a useful process of us being able to improve our performance information. Ensuring that our projects comply with the project plan and the project management framework. The improved level of compliance, which is an ongoing process we've had in our strategic plan over the last couple of years, to ensure that throughout the department, but predominantly at centre level and management area level, we improve our compliance, and then to manage the process of innovation within our environment. Moving then to our second budget programme, which is security not only in relation to security safety within our facilities for the inmates, but also for our members, also for service providers that work in our environment, but with an overview to contribute towards the safety of the public as a whole. The critical elements targets that we have there for this year deal with the security personnel, remembering that our OSD and a two stream, a rehabilitation official stream, and a security official stream, so ensuring that we develop the framework for enhancing the security skills of the skills of those security officers. Developing a security technology strategy, ensuring that we are using technology effectively where possible to replace work currently being done by human beings, but that we also ensure that it's an integrated system that generates information. We have there also the security analysis report and ongoing process of reflecting on security challenges within our department and being able to be proactive in identifying risks within that environment. The three targets there of the escape and the assault and the unnatural death are ongoing processes that we've been tracking in our strategic plan over a number of years with a view to being able to decrease them going forward. So that, Chairperson members, is the second budget program. The third budget program is the corrections budget program, dealing here with addressing the specific rehabilitation needs of the persons who've been sentenced for correctional supervision or who've been sentenced for incarceration. The particular element is the provision of correctional programs as well as the administration of the correctional sentence. The critical targets, and some of them are not new, they are targets that we had in last year's strategic plan, so we are increasing the level of it, the compiling of correctional sentence plans, but correctional sentence plans that are now based on the offender rehabilitation parts requirements on the white paper as opposed to previously existing sentence plans. We had started that last year in the process of setting high targets going forward. But the second bullet, I think, is an element particularly important in relation to the Minister's Performance Agreement, improving the implementation of correctional programs. We want to ensure that we increase the number of the percentage of offenders serving more than the 24 months who are involved in correctional programs, and we've provided you with a list of the correctional programs. I won't speak to that list. In addition, this particular program deals with our ongoing strategy in relation to overcrowding, reducing it down to 38%, and you will have seen through the strategic plan that it increases incrementally year on year, and I think the Minister has already indicated that our approach to overcrowding is a multi-pronged strategy. The implementation of the bail protocol is part of the criminal justice processes. The child Child Justice Act the Minister already referred to, that will obviously impact very strongly on the issue of child remand detainees. The video postponement or arraignment equipment in our facilities has also been referred to. The last element is obviously in a framework for improved management of foreign nationals within our facilities. Moving then to the CARE program, which is aimed at ensuring the well-being of the inmates, both remand detainees and sentenced offenders within our facility. The reflection in the targets on the databases around the particular services that we deal with, but again, a key focus on ensuring that we can increase the offender participation within the CARE program, and we've listed the psychological services, social services, spiritual care, health, and HIV and AIDS. And again, it correlates directly with elements of the Minister's performance agreement to ensure that we enhance that participation. Also under the CARE program, the targets in relation to health care, I think it's important for us to share with the select committee that we have engaged with the Department of Health very successfully over the last 6 weeks or so to ensure that we've got an integrated working strategy in relation to the provision of health care. We are interrogating the issue of the responsibility, whose responsibility ultimately is it for the provision of health care, given the challenges that we experience within this process. But our strategic plan does identify particular targets in relation to healthcare going forward. But that partnership, I think, should enable us to add some very significant progress in relation to this. Moving then to the budget program on development, this is dealing with needs-based educational and skills development processes. We have a range of different types of education and development programs, and if you look at the performance indicators, you can see that our indicators reflect the range of different types of educational service or development service that is provided to offenders. Ensuring that we are able to develop the database to track that information is a critical target for this year, that we are able to provide that technical information. And it's also within this program that the Department of Poverty Alleviation strategy lies, and ensuring that we can use offender neighbours to put power back into the communities and to assist with the war on poverty that government has adopted. Again, a correlation here between a critical part of the Minister's Performance Agreement, where we've committed ourselves over in the Performance Agreement, a five-year process, but to ensure that we increase the offender participation within all of the areas that are listed under the development program. So that's the formal education as well as skills development. Importantly, the production workshops and agricultural programs, which is an important part of ensuring productive involvement of our offenders. Moving then to the social reintegration, this program designed to ensure that there are services provided to offenders to enable their reintegration back into both families and into society. It is the area in which the management of parole takes place. It's the area in which the management of community corrections takes place. The performance indicators deal both with the parole test processes as well as the parole violation, but it also deals with the use of non-custodial ways of dealing with remand detention. The key targets that we are going to be delivering on during the course of this year is the revised medical parole legislation and policy. I'm sure that the selectors will be aware that work on that started in last financial year, but it will be going through, and it is going to involve an amendment of legislation given the way in which the Act is phrased at the moment. The incarceration framework, again, work that has been ongoing for the last couple of years since the amendment of the Act will be finalised during the course of this process. The refinement of and the reappointment of parole boards, as process will enable parole boards to be appointed for a five-year term of office starting from July of this year. The risk classification tool in relation to probationers and parolees is an important element of refining our approach to social reintegration and shifting from predominantly looking at monitoring to ensuring that we are able to facilitate reintegration. This program also deals with our targets in relation to reducing parole violations obviously there's a correlation there between our ability to ensure that offenders are in program within our facilities ahead of them going on parole. We've also undertaken to increase the involvement of offenders in day parole as part of the process of preparing people for social reintegration. Chairperson and honourable members, Minister, our facilities program is our last budget program. It deals with ensuring that we have facilities to support our functions in the department, be it security, corrections, development care, social reintegration. So it covers our correctional centres, our offices, as well as our community corrections facilities. We have been involved in a process of looking at the condition of the facility. So there's a target set in terms of doing a condition assessment of our facility. We are also involved in the process of doing a feasibility study around what is the most effective part of facilities. The Minister has spoken today and previously in relation to a process of rationalising our facilities, looking at facilities that are not cost effective, to developing a strategy as to what to do with them. This also reflects on the remand detention facilities that I referred to earlier, as well as obviously both the upgrading of existing facilities as well as the process of a couple of staff to pull together the Rainbow Child strategic plan is structured. Our strategies reflect national office strategies, those are the regulatory and monitoring strategies, that is the work that should be done by the head office component. It reflects an operations strategy, which is the work of the regional commissions management in the region, which is the actual service delivery of the department. We've got 83 strategies currently within the regulatory monitoring, 58 in the operations strategy, and you'll see as the strategic plan unfolds each year that elements move from the regulatory monitoring into the operations strategy. All of the strategies are aimed at being able to deliver on the white paper. We also, in the strategic plan, have the project portfolio management strategy. Speaking to it very briefly, there are four portfolios. The one is the Master Information Systems Plan, which is the information system that supports our core business and supports our monitoring and evaluation system. The second is the organizational development strategy, for example, our second-day establishment being part of that portfolio of projects. The third portfolio is the crime prevention strategy, and that would be where things like the offender rehabilitation project, the social reintegration project, the remand detention project would be fitting in, because all of those ultimately are contributing to crime prevention. And the last portfolio is the one which has the most massive budget, the infrastructure development project. The strategic plan document also includes our service delivery improvement plan. It's a requirement in terms of compliance with the public service regulations and the white paper on transformation of service delivery. There are four key services that we have identified, and it runs for a three-year period. We have identified the management of access of service providers and stakeholders within our correctional centres as being one area in which we would improve our level of service delivery. The payment of bail and fines at correctional centres is a very important service that we provide, and one in which we focus in terms of service delivery to the public and to the families of people within our facilities. Important. The scheduling of visits to offenders is a very, very important part of our social reintegration, and an area in which there are enormous challenges, and one in which we have identified quite significant gains that can be made. And the last one, obviously, is enabling communication between ourselves and the public, so it's focusing on our telephone and so that is the service delivery improvement plan. Also, as part of the requirements in the strategic plan, is to give you a strategic human resource management plan, which deals with the demand for supply forces, employees, coming out of the strategic goals and objectives of the department. So it speaks to the strategies that we have in the budget program part D of the strategic plan. It's aimed to ensure that we meet our human resource needs in line with the imperatives of the white paper, and it links also then to the regional strategic HR plan to ensure that there's an integration between the national office work and the regional work. In conclusion, we have mapped out for you in the presentation the work of the department over the NTS, but focusing, Chairperson, on the target set for this financial year, not the implementation of the strategic plan needs to be undertaken in partnership with civil society, in cooperation with oversight bodies, and particularly important for us is with the support and the monitoring of the portfolio committee, the billing committee, the AG, and I think the commissioner has spoken on the interaction with the AG that we've had in relation to being able to ensure that our compliance levels are improved going forward. The last slide I'm not speaking to is simply gives you a breakdown of where in the strategic plan document that you're looking for the strategic plan you will be able to find. Check this out, hope that you know, we are open.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the Select Committee. We just concluded our presentation to yourselves, and we would like to engage with yourselves on the issues that we have presented today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, we can engage with the report. I must also question members that too there will be a plenary. Members can only ask those questions that they feel that they need to be responded to. Other outstanding questions, we will request the secretary to forward them to the department in a written form, and the department will respond. Honorable Bloom, Honorable Nancy, and Honorable Kunda.
Thank you very much, Chair. No, I agree with you. We don't have enough time to engage the department, especially the minister. But it's fine. We are having half an hour to engage. But, Jefferson, let me also welcome the appointment of the new commissioner and the CFO, because it's very much important that we must have stability in correctional services. I thought that the minister will come and announce today that there's also going to be a change in the ranks, like general. But it's not. I'm happy to hear that the minister. There's also no general in correctional services. Minister. Chairperson, my question is around the youth in prison. But I heard the minister is saying that there will be compulsory education for youth offenders and even children. What about the other offenders? I know that in prison, the age is between 18 and 35. What about this others, the other group? On the budget, Chairperson, I want to know from the minister, how far is the suspension of the two senior members, the former national commissioner and the former commissioner of Limpopo, Northwest, and so on. And how does it impact on the budget? Because I think that the one of the former commissioner of Limpopo, I think it's 2 years now that he is on suspension. The national commissioner, I'm not sure about that one. The second question, Chairperson, is on you are dealing with the budget. Minister, this nutrition contract of the prison, and I think it's 31 prisons. I know for a fact it's a very expensive exercise that will cost the government a lot of money. What is the minister doing in addressing that situation? I know that there's a contract for 3 years, signed for 3 years, but what is the minister going to do maybe to address that one? My last one, Chairperson,
and I'm not going to ask any more questions. The training facilities, Zonderwater and Kruenstad, what is happening in these facilities? Is there new recruits or not? Thanks, Chair.
Not sure which one to prioritize, but I've got a lot of questions. But I want to ask one important one. Last time when we met, you said to us there was moratorium on employment. And when you exchanged, you were covering some money. And now I'm not here really saying anything because we asked you time frame about it. And we said to you, when you come then you must tell us how far are you with that moratorium. So I hope you will be able to tell us now. And the other thing I'm interested to know in terms of the OSD, you are in phase two, that's to be informed. How far are you with that? So that when are you completing the program? So that at least when we get to the constituencies we are able to answer when people are asking. On the issues of corruption in the correctional services. I have not heard anything because we have asked you last time. I thought maybe, because what is this time? Because your documents definitely are something totally different from what we had. Is that that there's no time in what you told us last time? I mean, I just know, how are you dealing with this issue of corruption in the correctional services? Especially your members, because they are the people who are involved. We raise the issues of members that they are transporting things in and out of throughout the country. That's what we say. And then we had examples. We had another question that we have agreed with my fellow and his friend. I must not ask it. I'm going to keep it. But if there's no answer, Minister, I'll come back to you. Because it was about this corruption in prison. Where to find prisoners? People like that are a threat to community, being released before time, not knowing what and how it happened. That has happened in my community. People cannot understand what happened. And then I wanted maybe to hear from you about this, but I don't want to be specific about it because we are sorting it out, but it's not sorted out by this evening. Then I'll come back to you.
It's a threat.
No, it's not a threat. The issue of gender. These things are a very serious problem. In that, we said last time, you come here, send the bus captain distributing a bus. The majority would come. The majority of us, of you, are male. What is the program? What is the program of transforming? Because that's where we want to see. Because we are talking about transforming the institution. But on top, you are not moving. So at least I think you need to tell us about this equity target. How far are you with them? I think, Minister, that's all I have, because there's this issue of overcrowding, and we can't ask all these things because of this time. But it's interesting to know, because you've got many children in prison. You've got awaiting trials. I mean, people are waiting trials in these prisons. But obviously, some of the questions might not lie with you because maybe the investigating officers or something else, I mean, they become a problem. I think that will be enough for me, and also the issue of disability. I can't leave this out because people with disabilities might get angry when they see me getting out of here being quiet about them because they got a hope. That when there are people like me in here, we will ask, we don't see you doing anything about this. Why are you not employing them? post-parliament test, because the now manifesto would promise that people with disabilities will be taken seriously and will be put in positions. Why in your department, Minister, you are not doing anything here? Why we don't see any disabled person? It's very, very important so that we do understand. Are we implementing these priorities and these issues that we are promising our people? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. It's a pity that time doesn't allow us to ask all these questions. Let me first thank the Minister and Deputy Minister that they are here today. Thank you that we don't hear the words they're acting again. Just very much thanks. Perhaps I'm not going to speak totally on your budget and what you ask. I'm going to speak to you concerning your strategic plan. How far are you people off? Do you have any performance policies in your department? Does your new 12-hour shift, is it effective, efficient? And why is it not implementing by all correctional services? Why only certain correctional services implementing the 12-hour shift? And then the working hours for warders. Why is this department the only government department that are working for 45 hours per week? Then I would ask a very sensitive question. And I want an honest answer. I'm not talking about the people who are sitting around the table now here. You people are colored financially. I'm talking about an ordinary warder who's working at a correctional service with dangerous offenders, as you call them, clients. Your ratio is unacceptable. I don't know if it's true. How can you have four members on a night shift duty, 12-hour night shift duty, in a minimum medium prison with 968 offenders or clients? You've got only four men working on that shift. And it happened not only once, it happened three times. The other thing is, and this is a sensitive issue, your visiting hours to clients in prison. I see, I heard there's something there. I want to know, how serious are you people to really rehabilitate an offender and to help an offender? And I will come to what Honorable Bloom has said and what my colleague Menzies also said. Concerning the juveniles and the children, the problems for those people are in prison. Are you happy with your rehabilitation program in prison? Are you really happy? And can you explain to us how do you monitor it and how do you evaluate it? Does it really help those juveniles change the way how they think, and the programs that you have in place, how do you do that? The other question I would like to ask, how effective is it that regional commissioners can have, is the regional commission of Mpumalanga, do I have it right, Northwest, and Limpopo, one person. How effective is that? Mpumalanga, Limpopo, if I have the right thing, you must correct me. He or she is a regional commissioner of Mpumalanga, Northwest, and Limpopo. Is it right? I know Mudise is from the Free State in the Northern Cape. And I think, how effective is that thing on service delivery? And then we had an oversight visit in Eastern Cape. Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister, please, I'm dealing with you. We went to a place, I think it's King Williamstown, I'm not 100% sure. We went there and we visited where the they kept the waiting class there. We as members of parliament went there. I'm saying to you, and Honourable Minister, I'm very honest. I don't even want to put my dog in that place, especially in the kitchen. The place like that. It's impossible. So I'm pleading with you, can you just check with that, please? And the last thing I would like to ask, Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister, is there nowhere in your budget or in your strategic plan do I see anything about your danger allowance? And you know, I pay visits to the prisons when I'm in Northern Cape. And I ask them these questions. And I mean, you know how much you pay them. Is that, are we serious about looking after the people that are supposed to help people to rehabilitate? How do we motivate people to work with offenders and yet they are unhappy? They are working in an environment where they can't express themselves. When they get to work, they're unhappy. How do you motivate a person if that person are working with an offender who's got 7 cases, got more than 2-3 murders, serious cases against him, and then you must work with that person, and yet your danger allowance is not, your dangerous allowance per month is not even 400 rand. How do you motivate the workers? All other questions, we will put them on writing. And repeatedly, the last question is this one. I see it was asked also in the Standing Committee of Appropriation. It's about the unauthorized expenditure to the amount of 483 million. Then there's something the Department of Honorable Mercy also asked this question. I will just, in the 2007-08, which led to 144 dismissals and 423 suspensions. Can you just clarify that for us? I thank you.
On offender labor. The report mentioned that offenders will be used for labor. What kind of labor is that? And is it within prisons? And if it is outside the prisons, will there be incentives for those offenders? The other question, Honorable Minister, majority of these members also serve in the Petitions Committee. I think it will be of interest to know how far are you with the issue that was sent to the to you regarding 2 offenders in Kroonstad prison.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll also join Honorable members to congratulate the department for appointment. As we know that it was a head issue on academics. We congratulate the incumbent of the post. This issue of baseline information, it's like they did not get correct. That's why they are still going to start afresh. But it's like they are going to research or explore. I didn't hear about the plan that you have in terms of that the baseline. The other issue is that in some time back, about 3 weeks or 4 weeks back, one read about the president's travel, where it went about a week or two without water. If you could just give us mechanisms that you have in terms of that challenge, what is the condition now? And the other thing is to delay instead of. If I may check, the one of themselves who committed offenses, do you have statistics? prisoners who are workers who committed offense by one or another, conniving others, making sure that prisoner escapes to the hospital. If we have that statistic. The other thing is that related to 2010, the people that is coming, do you have mechanism to accommodate our visitors who might be prisoners? How are you going to treat that type of people? They say, our visitors come here, because I'm told that there is a special gate who, on this one, come. They may think their profession is disproportionate, is speeding into it, or do you have a facility? Are you going to accommodate them? It helps something because I believe that now already are overcrowded in terms of our own prisoners. But what about those who will be coming? And those who will be coming for crime if they are arrested. Do we have something specific to deal with that? For example, there's this terror plot. If they happen to be arrested, they crime of higher degree. They should not educate our prisoners. How are you treating them? That's really important. I think the OSG has been mentioned by my colleague and the places of state has been mentioned. I think that may not go. But the other thing is this. Europe has had great in respect of foundation financial disclosure. It has been said, I'm sure, in the standing committee on appropriation presentation. There's 0% compliance. Do you have a mechanism to deal with that? Should we have a plan so that there are financial disclosure, financial disclosure forms are filled? What's the anti-corruption faces? This general question that we ask you. Let me rest my case. And maybe, even if they ask, if others, the package deal with the address, both address, the shop type. We are left with text bills to go to our brother. I'm not sure if that's all. Let me just speak.
The last one.
Yeah, Chairperson, on prison labor. Minister, I understand that there's human rights issues as well. But you see, you go into each and every town and city here in the country. And things have collapsed. We are sitting with an overcrowding situation in the country where people are here and there the whole day. Why are we not using them also to help? Filling potholes, cleaning rivers. They can do that instead of lying there and doing nothing. Eating taxpayers' money, enjoying taxpayers' money. I understand the police are trying their level best to be hard on crime. But for as long as we are having facilities, you see, it's no more prisons, it's facilities now. For as long as we are having facilities and not prisons, we will have this type of thing. General, they declare they can do whatever. Because they know that when they go in, I know, Minister, your staff are the prisoners, and the prisoners are the prison officials in prison. Let us be harsh on them, Minister, so that they must know when they come out, they must have a message for others to say, please stay away from them. And Minister Ngakula is very dangerous.
You can respond, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will respond to just a few. The rest of the
the issues with the reforming to find. We respond to those issues relating to policy pronouncements which I've made. All managers are here, the entire top management of the department is here today, both from head office and from the region. And I think that on some of the matters raised here, they'd be the best people to give to answer questions. I want to start with a matter raised by Honorable Bloom on education of young offenders. And to say that one of the reasons why one makes this kind of pronouncement, it is because of my immediate impression and experience now in DCS. Being responsible for instance, for approval of proposals for lifers to go on parole from the NCCS, what I have come across is very, very disturbing. I use this anecdote that it's just for you to get an understanding and appreciate why we are concerned about education of young people. We have a number of young people who went into our centers around 1988, 1989, who were given life sentences committing various crimes. And since my appointment last year, each time the NCCS, the National Correctional Council or Correctional Services, meets to look to consider cases of lifers who should be released for parole, they then make a submission to the minister. And going through all of those, you will find that young people went in when they were 18, 19 years old, right? Have now served 20, 21, 22 years. They are now coming out. Last year we released about 26 around that, because we released two batches. This year we've already done another batch of about 12, right? NCCS will be sitting soon again to look at some of these applications. Now, of all the applications, cases I've dealt with, there is not one person who is above the age of 50 being released. So we're releasing young people who went in when they were 18, 19, who are now 40, 41, 42, right? And none of them are coming out equipped with the necessary skills so that they are not recruited back into criminal syndicates. None of them. Yes, they've done some programs, such as your anger management program, if you were in for rape, for those programs, anti-rape kind of things. The issue for me is, yes, that's fine. But the fact that a young man, a young boy then, went into prison, was given a life, has served 20, 21 years, and is coming out with nothing, should be a cause for concern among us. But not only that, the majority of inmates convicted and those on remand, in fact, the majority are young people, juveniles. Okay? So for me, I think that as the Charter, Freedom Charter says, and as government of the ANC committed itself, we have to make sure that our young people are provided with education. Right? Now, some people feel that we're going to be providing education to people who are criminals. At the end of the day, these people will come back and be part of our society, must be reintegrated into those communities. And if they come out with nothing, they're not going to be useful to the country. So I come from that point of view, that my approach is that as much as is possible, and I'm not saying this will happen overnight, but we've got to motivate young people such that they appreciate the importance of education. but also appreciate that they have to develop skills which will be necessary for them when they go back into community. So we come from that, that's how we approach the issue. For now, the position is that if you have a choice to do it or not to do it. Question I have is, in what way are we helping our society? My view is that it shouldn't be optional. It's going to be difficult to enforce it, but we've got to motivate them such that they appreciate the importance of education. And I think that's the one issue. It's going to be difficult because in some of the centers, atmosphere is not conducive to learning and teaching. We've got to create the necessary infrastructure so that in those areas where there is nothing, we can start doing this. I'm not saying it will happen overnight. It's going to take us time, but we must make a start. Yesterday, you heard me making pronouncement on the nutrition contract. I'm aware that currently we have a nutrition contract in 7 management areas. It's equal to 55 centers. Now, this one as well, I know that we have a 3-year contract. And obviously, it's also going to take a bit of time to move. But what is important is part of the labor force that we are referring to is that in the same way that inmates were able to prepare food for themselves in the past, they should be able to prepare food even now. Why should we contract people to prepare meals for inmates when inmates are available, could be available to afford food as well? So it's a matter that we also must reconsider. It will actually save us a lot of money, but I don't know. I am informed that there is a study that's being done. Obviously, that study will speak to compare whether it is cheaper for us to outsource or for the inmates to do their own cooking. But my view is that inmates should do their own cooking. On the moratorium, I think colleagues will explain what it is that we are doing, but I can assure you that it is very difficult. Chair, there is a contradiction here. Currently, our compensation budget, budget is 69%. And Parliament has been very critical about that high figure for compensation of employees. But on the other hand, we do have vacancies, and we actually have a higher rate of vacancies. Right? What we have done so far is to take a decision that we should look at critical vacancies. It should be an exercise where the management looks at all critical vacancies in the provinces and at national head office and see if with the little resources that we have, we couldn't fill those vacancies so that work continues in those areas. And I'm aware the former National Acting Commission was leading an exercise together with all of his managers to identify those critical vacancies for filling in. On the matter of labor force, Chair, these two, when we came in last year on our first budget board, we did say that it's going to be important that our officials, our officers at the center should actually develop plans that seek to guide us at head office so that we can formulate a proper policy on the whole area of utilization of inmate labor force. Here is a chunk of people who are sitting around, wake up in the morning, play sports or whatever. But in fact, we could actually use those people. We know that it is going to create a problem in the union. Because worldwide, the view is that if you use inmates to do some work. Then they call it cheap labor. It's scarce. They call it scarce, something like that. But obviously, we have to go into, we have to go into negotiations with a whole range of stakeholders. What is important is that the principle of having inmates doing some kind of work, whether cleaning, whether repairing things, and all of those things, but there has to be some work. But we started at a very small scale, check, with encouraging centers to adopt schools in areas where the center is surrounded by a settlement, so that we can start looking, dealing with small things such as renovation of dilapidated schools, things which communities will appreciate and see that actually inmates are flowing back to society and are expressing, it's an expression of remorse and eagerness to be rehabilitated. I'm aware that project has started here in the Western Cape. I'm aware it has started in Gauteng. Certainly there could be other good stories told by the other regions as well. But we're starting at a very small scale. In KZN last year, for instance, we went to hand over houses, child-headed households, which were started from scratch because they were dilapidated, and they were had to be started from scratch by inmates in that area. So there are programs which are there, which have been put in place. Smaller and we'll get there. We'll get to a point where all inmates will be motivated to do some kind of work. What is important is how do we motivate them to do that? What do we bring as an incentive to attract them to do this kind of work? The last matter, Chair, is that matter, of your concept of offenders. Chair, we are seized with this matter, as you are aware. You wrote to us. We've been interacting with a whole range of people, including the presidency, and the matter has not been concluded as yet. But I am aware that there is a letter that has been written to the chair of the petitions committee to look at the three options which members had submitted. So we're looking at what it is that we can do. But Chair, you will appreciate that this is a very difficult matter. An extremely difficult matter, and I think you must be honest about it. Because here are two people who did not appear before the TRC, and therefore we did not benefit from those processes, were not granted amnesty, and yet they are co-accused. They are co-accused, yes, are out because they were granted amnesty by the TRC, of course, because they volunteered to appear before the TRC. Now, this particular matter, I mean, the witnesses who have come forward to say indeed these two people were not part of that criminal activity. They just found themselves in that situation. These people were sentenced on the basis of the common purpose principle. Now, it's a very difficult one, and already they spent 18 years of their time. In 2 years, they'll be eligible for parole. So I'm just saying that we're trying to do something about it, but we also have to make sure that in taking a decision about what to do, I have to protect myself and make sure that everything that I do is according to the law, so that I don't violate our own law. Equally, that consultation with the presidency and the state law advisor and then my legal advisor, who are the people who have been seen with this matter, is that process. I rely on that process, and I believe that is the process that's going to guide us as to exactly what decision we should take on this matter. Equally, the presidency expects to get some guidance from us, from KCS. So that's where we are. And the very last matter, Chair, welcome. I think that the regional commissioners are here to respond. But what I have said to the management is that whatever we do in preparation for FIFA World Cup, for purposes of incarceration of people who shall be facing, particularly foreigners, we would have to make sure that we do everything according to the book, do everything and prevent a situation where after the World Cup there will be many cases of litigation. Okay. I certainly wouldn't want to see a situation where people are locked in our facilities, and these are Europeans maybe or whoever, and 1, 2, 3, I'm told that somebody has been raped, and 1, 2, 3, they go back and launch a case of this investigation case against them. So we have to do everything. I would hope that those regions which have been part of the preparation would make sure that the kind of facilities where we shall keep those people and make sure that these people will be isolated and not be mixed with our people who are on demand detention services who are away from trial, to prevent a situation where our situation is worse after the long demand winter. So I would hope that whatever preparation is done, they make sure that it will be in the interest of protecting, particularly those people who will be living in our country, even if they come into trial. We do have a corruption strategy in the Department of Correctional Services, and our records speak for itself. Colleagues, we believe that we are winning the war against corruption. My view sitting here as Minister responsible for corruption is that we probably have not communicated enough about some of the achievements we have made. We for instance, have a 96% conviction rate. In cases where people were found to have committed fraud and corruption. Currently, we have 219 cases that are still being investigated. So it can't be said that we're doing nothing about corruption. The very contract that we've had with the SIU and the investigations that have been conducted by the SIU within the department are a clear demonstration of commitment to uproot corruption from the department. The last matter, Chair, is this issue of overcrowding or suspension. Oh, I thought, Honorable Bloom, you would be aware that obviously we wouldn't be having a national commissioner if former national commissioner was still under suspension. That matter has been handled, it has been dealt with. As far as we are concerned, her contract was terminated in February, the 26th of February. She has since been paid every cent owed to her. You recall that her contract under normal circumstances would have ended in August of 2010. But I decided that no, we should terminate the contract in February to allow the department to go out and advertise and attract people who can come in and start the new financial year. And that's what we have done. And that matter has been settled and has been put to rest. We have no former national commissioner who is suspended. We now have a new commissioner. From that basis that we have employed, cabinet approved the appointment of Dom Moyane as commissioner. With regards to Mpumalanga and Mr. Kilinga, Jamie will have to elaborate on that matter, but Mr. Kilinga indeed was suspended for a long time, and eventually he faced disciplinary processes from September last year, and I'm aware at that point he indicated that he would be willing to leave the department. communications between the department and Mr. Gilila to deal with his exit from the department. So I think they should be able to elaborate on that. The very last matter which I would like to address, Chair, is that of overcrowding. Chair, we're doing something about overcrowding. We're working very hard to deal with issues of removing people, those who do not belong to, who shouldn't be at the center, from the center. I'm sure you are aware of the Bail Protocol signed between the Department of Police, the Department of Justice, and the Department of Correctional Services, which allows us to apply to the court for people who have been granted a bail of less than 1,000 years, right? For them to be kept outside of the country. That's the one. But you also are aware that there is a provision whereby people sentenced between 0 to 24 months, that's 2 years, again, after serving a fraction of their sentences, head of centers may apply to the court for custodial sentences to be converted or to be diverted to other programs. The other thing which we had announced some time earlier on, the possibility of actually prisoner exchange in the area within the region, in that region. Within SADC, there is a protocol that's being mooted, right, which suggests that we ministers of correctional services should consider possibility of a prisoner transfer within the region. And obviously we do have high numbers of Zimbabweans and high numbers of Mozambicans. But obviously before we can even finalize this matter and agree to it as minister, we have to look, discuss with them, look at our own policy, because we have a policy in South Africa that says there may be no prisoner. But prisoner transfer in our case within the region may actually be necessary, particularly with respect to the of the two countries that I say, because those two countries have actually high numbers of inmates. Obviously, we also have to look at the various categories of inmates. If ever there was such a decision, obviously, we wouldn't be able to release a mass execution to other people without having a guarantee that you. So it's a whole lot of things. It's a new thing, and I know that maybe some of my colleagues here may have a problem with that position. But we have no choice. We are part of the region. We are part of the region. The matter has been tabled at one of the ISCC meetings, and it's a matter that we have to take forward here in South Africa as well. If there is no agreement, that's fine, but we need to understand this is the thinking now. In the region with regards to the issues of overcrowding. It would assist us a great deal, actually. It would alleviate the rate of overcrowding. But I also, as a parting shot, would like to say police should also remain fast. As the police intensify their fight against criminals, and as the Department of Justice is dealing with all the issues of backlog, because there's been a whole outcry about backlog in our court, and they deal with all of those things. People who are at the receiving end, the Department of Corrections. So I don't believe there will come a time when we can talk about reducing the numbers, but I don't believe that there will come a time when soon, in the near future, where there will be zero overcrowding at our center. Of course, you are aware that we are building more centers. But whether building one center is the answer, is the solution to the problems we have in our society, is something that we need to talk about and engage about. The point is, we don't want people going to correctional centers. And therefore, society needs to do something and realize that the fact that we have the majority of inmates being juvenile, we have to realize that something has gone wrong. Thank you. therefore we have to take it's a societal responsibility to make sure that we mobilize our community, to mobilize our children so that they don't get involved in technical activities. Thank you, Chairperson. Commissioner,
I think we have to adjourn and go for the plenum.
I was going to suggest that other questions can be forwarded to us in the camp for the purposes of oversight follow up with the department if that was needed. So we approve the budget debate.
Let me take the opportunity to thank the minister, the deputy minister, and the team for the presentations they have made. It has indeed prepared us for the coming policy debate, and we hope as we requested that the outstanding questions will be responded to in writing to the secretary of the committee. Minister.
Could I just discussing with the leader of government business and the chief whip of the MCOP. Somehow I don't know how this happened. I think it's a problem of coordination between the MCOP and the National Assembly. On the 26th, the National Assembly will be voting on the schedule, as you know, for the budget vote. Usually that process starts in the afternoon into the night. Sometimes we leave Parliament at 9 in the evening. And for as long as that voting has not happened, no minister will leave the National Assembly, because you have to be sure and you have to be there when people make declarations or when people object to your vote, to your budget. Now, my problem is that I'm supposed to be in the MCOP at 4 o'clock to present my budget debate. But on the other hand, I have to be in the National Assembly to be there to answer questions and to listen to parties whether they will support our budget or not. Now, that puts us in a very difficult situation. So I've appealed to the Leader of Government Business this morning, but also I've requested my office to engage the Office of the Chief Whip to see if we could not bring forward the budget vote debate in the MCOP, because it's going to be humanly impossible to be in the MCOP on the 26th holiday when the entire shaking of budget is going to be approved by Parliament and voted for.
Now we'll hear from the programming committee. Honourable members,